Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levanier, and in this hour, crime shows. Later in the hour, we'll enjoy The Whistler. Right now, it's Danger with Granger, a Mutual Broadcasting System episode from 1956 or 7 called Innocent, Innocent.
Hiya, Nat.
How do you do, Mitch?
We want to talk to you, Nat.
Of course. Come in.
Hey, you got a nice spot here, Nat.
Oh, I'm glad you like it.
I see you're still doing a little engraving, too.
Oh, that. I was working on a design for a coupon. One to be included in a soap wrapper. Mitch, what have I done? Why, you slapped me.
Matt, where are they?
They? What is this they you speak of?
Come on, Matt. We haven't got all day. Where are the plates?
For the coupons? I've not started them yet. Here, you see, this is just the design I've made up.
Okay, Matt. You can cut the fairy tales. How much?
How much for what?
We got a tip, Nat. You're back in business again. We'll pay money, good money, for that set of plates. How much?
I think you better leave.
Of course, if money doesn't make you talk, Nat, there are other ways. Like this.
This is Steve Granger, private detective, with a story about a character who had ideas about going for a killing. The killing got there first. In just a moment, I'll take you back to one of my most interesting cases. This is Granger. I was seated in my office, feeling calm, peaceful, and full of goodwill. Why not? The rent had been paid for 2 months in advance, and nobody had been using my torso for a target lately. I had plans for a pleasant evening. The plans disappeared in the shrill of my phone. Hello.
Steve Granger?
Yeah? Who's that?
This is Nat, the printer.
What's wrong, Nat?
Come down here right away. 2410 East 13th, in the basement. And bring a doctor.
Matt! Holy... What happened?
They came and took them, my plates. You've got to get them back for me.
Take it easy, Nat. The doc should be here any minute.
But you've got to find those plates.
What plates?
I always wanted to make a pair of perfect ones. I finished them this afternoon. I made one print. Granger, I did it.
Uh-oh. Counterfeit plates again, huh?
You've got to get them back, Granger. I did it only for a hobby.
That kind of hobby got you 10 years in the pen. Who cut you up like this, Nat? Who tortured you?
It was Mitch.
Mitch? What's his last name?
I don't know. He's been coming around for some time. Found out that what I was doing.
Was he alone?
Another man. Older. Looked like big money.
What was his name?
I don't know. He just stood there and watched. He was enjoying himself.
I wonder what happened to that doctor.
Granger.
Got anything in your medicine chest? Maybe I can ease your pain a little.
Nothing, Granger. Just get back my plates.
Nat the printer closed his eyes for the last time. I picked up his phone, called the police department, and then, because the government boys would be interested in Nat's plates, made a call to a friend of mine named Ed. He was there in 5 minutes.
Hey, somebody really gave it to him, didn't they?
Yeah. Before he died, Nat mentioned one name, Mitch.
Mitch. That doesn't mean much. He say anything else?
He mentioned there was another man in the party, an older guy. Looked like he had money.
No names.
Right.
You look around this place?
No, I thought I'd wait for you. It'll be your baby if the man who stole those plates starts using them.
Another day, another counterfeiter.
Well, fellas, you find out anything about the crime?
Who are you, Bud, and how did you get in?
Oh, I'm with the news. I heard there might be a yarn down here.
Well, there isn't.
Oh, now, don't give me that. Aren't you a government man?
I said there is no story down here.
And the guy on the couch? It looks like he's suffering from murder.
Look, Bud, get out of here. We've got a lot to do.
My paper won't
like this. I'm not worried about your paper now. Will you beat it?
Yeah, sure, if that's the way you feel. See it. Hey, hey. Aren't you Granger, the private eye?
So what?
Well, it must be quite a deal. The cops, government men, even a private eye.
Goodbye.
I always welcome a chance to work with the government boys, so when Ed suggested I check with him later in the day, I agreed. Also, I wanted a chance to get next to this Mitch, the man who tortured Nat the printer. I'd liked old Nat, even if he was a counterfeit artist. However, if I'd heard a conversation that was taking place in another part of town just then, I might not have been so eager.
Well, what did you find out?
I went back and pretended I was a newspaper man.
Wasn't that dangerous? You have no credentials.
Well, who cares about credentials? I found out something. Nat wasn't dead when we left.
But I thought...
Yeah, so did I. But he lived long enough to call that private detective, Steve Granger. Seems that Nat knew Granger. He told him my first name before he died.
We'll have to do something about Granger.
Oh, no more killing. If we kill Granger, we could get into trouble. He's got plenty of friends.
Don't worry. I think I know just how to handle Mr. Granger.
I'll continue with this interesting story in a minute. I was sitting in my office checking with people in Manhattan who might know somebody named Mitch. So far, it had come up with 50 men by that name. None of them the right one. Then the man walked in. Strictly Wall Street. Gray business suit, Homburg, and $1 million worth of aplomb.
Mr. Granger, you have been recommended to me.
Thanks. Who did the recommending? And why?
I have a delicate matter on my hands. It concerns my daughter. She's young, headstrong. She's in Philadelphia.
A nice combination.
I want her brought back to New York, tactfully, of course.
Be more explicit, Mr.
My daughter is in love with a young man there. She refuses to come home. I want her brought back.
Is she over 21?
She's 22.
I'm afraid she's mistress of her own future. It's nothing you can do.
I thought that perhaps you could induce her, shall we say, to return.
If I try to induce her, as you say, and she resented it, I could wind up in a Philadelphia pokey. I'm afraid I'll have to turn you down.
Dear me, that's most unfortunate. Couldn't I urge you to change your mind?
Not just this minute, no. However, I might reconsider.
In case you should, Mr. Granger, my card. Goodbye.
I waited the proper length of time, after which I set sail astern of the portly gent. I stayed 10 feet behind him, keeping an eye on his Homburg hat, which stuck out above the rest of the crowd.
Hey, Granger, you're just the guy I want to see.
Not now, reporter. I got things to do. Beat it.
Oh, but listen, I want the answer to a very important question.
Will you let go of me? I'm trying to keep an eye on somebody. But the few seconds in which I was delayed by the reporter enabled Mr. Homburg hat to be swallowed up in the crowd. And when I turned round to do a little verbal pasting of the reporter, he'd disappeared too. I fished out the card the pompous character had left with me. It gave the name of Henry Glazer, and the address, when I found it, turned out to be an automobile dealer's. But it also turned out that Henry Glazer at that address bore no resemblance whatsoever to the guy in the Homburg hat. My deductive powers were really working that morning. It didn't take me more than 10 minutes to figure out that I'd been fooled. I left the place, wondering why Mr. Homburg had lied to me. Then I got that feeling up and down my spine and realized I was wearing more tails than a mink stole. I couldn't catch a glimpse of my follower, but I decided to make a small detour on my way back to the office and call in on my friend Cal Hendricks.
Well, well, how's the peripatetic private eye this fine morn?
Hey, that's a $25 word. I'm only a $20 detective.
Peripatetic simply means walking from place to place.
Yeah, well, walking is something I'm not too fond of right now. I've got company.
Someone on your tail?
Yeah. I've been keeping one eye over my shoulder, one across the street, and one when I could spare it in front of me.
Something brewing, huh?
Yeah. I got a call from Matt the printer.
I thought he'd gone out of business.
He has. As of today. Somebody wanted a set of plates he'd made. And they weren't too squeamish about how they got them.
Don't tell me I've got a tender stomach.
Just keep your ears flapping and see what you can pick up, Cal.
My friend, you may have three eyes, but I don't have fingers on my ears. However, I shall attempt to ascertain whatever information is available.
Well, if you get any, just be a good guy and translate it before you pass it on. I was feeling kind of dizzy from Mr. Hendricks' verbal gymnastics, so I nearly walked straight into the lobby of my office building without looking. It was lucky I didn't, because the lobby was currently being inhabited by someone I didn't want to meet, one of the local gun boys. And it was a cinch I was his target for today. I beat it round to the back entrance, hoping there wasn't another one stashed there. There wasn't. I waited till the gun boy moved towards the street entrance, then I made my break up the stairs into my office. I made straight for my phone and put in a call.
Hello?
Ed, this is Granger.
Oh, hi, Gumshoe. Say, how do you feel?
Hotter than a bride's burned broccoli. What's with me anyway? Who hates me?
Don't be concerned, Granger. You had a man or two tailing you, but we protected you.
Nab any of the men who were after me?
No, but we will next time.
Well, here we go again. Hey, somebody's coming down the hall, Ed.
What, to your office?
Yeah. Looks like a woman through the glass. Now listen, I'll unlock the door and let her in. I'll put a paper over the telephone so she won't notice it's off the hook. That way you can get an earful, in case she's got anything to do with the counterfeit plates.
Right.
1 second.
Let me in quick.
Sure, baby.
Why did you lock that door?
Well, for my own protection. What's on your mind?
There was something stolen today from a man named Nat. Do I make myself clear?
You're doing the talking.
Would you like to get back what was stolen?
Little lady, before this oral shenanigan goes any farther, let me explain. I'm not the literate type. Any talking you do, do it in simple, direct words. Now, if by what was stolen you mean counterfeit $20 plates, say so.
Well, I... suppose I do.
I don't want to suppose anything. You came up here. You do the talking.
Very well. Would you like to get back the counterfeit plates?
Have you got them?
No, but I can arrange for them to be handed to you tonight.
Just what part do you play?
I'm just a messenger.
Okay, beautiful. I'll take those plates tonight. If you hand them to me in person.
Be down at Pier 7. You know where that is? Off Cortlandt Street.
Yeah. And it's plenty dark down there.
You won't be hurt. Be there at 8 o'clock.
That's a large pier. Any special place?
Directly in front of the entrance. That shouldn't be hard to find.
Thanks. I'll see you then.
And by the way, the people who sent me told me to tell you this. Don't tell anyone where you're going.
I wouldn't dream of it.
Good. I'll see you at 8.
By the way, who are you?
Nobody. Till tonight, Mr. Granger.
The friendly type. You still there, Ed?
Yeah, I got the lot. And don't worry, we'll get those birds tonight.
Ed sounded very confident, but I wasn't so sure. The whole setup felt phony. There were too many mysterious elements floating around. And if there's one thing I don't like, it's a floating mysterious element. You only have to hit it hard enough, and you're liable to find yourself sunk. In just a minute, I'll bring you the climax of the case. I hung up after talking to the government man, feeling that maybe his confidence was not misplaced. Maybe tonight would tie up this peculiar business of the missing counterfeit plates. But just as I was thinking these happier thoughts, my door opened.
Granger.
Oh, so you came back.
Our arrangement was that you wouldn't tell anyone where you were going.
Well, I didn't.
No, but it was very convenient for you to have the telephone hidden under the newspaper, so he wouldn't notice it was off the hook.
Oh.
I didn't trust you, Granger. I came back and listened at the door to make certain.
So, what now?
I don't know. I'll have to make sure you keep your part of the bargain. You may hear from me later.
I didn't know what the girl meant by bargain, so I got on the phone and told Ed, the government man, what had taken place. He was as despondent as I, but nothing could be done for the moment. I killed several hours watching the minute hand on my office clock make the rounds. At 8 o'clock, things started to pop. Hello?
Granger?
Yeah?
Will you give me your word that you won't have yourself covered if I make another date with you?
Where and when?
Oh, no. Your word first.
Okay, you've got it.
The same place I mentioned earlier. 1 hour from now. Walk down the street from the north towards the pier. I'll be waiting.
When the girl hung up, I got out my gun, looked it over carefully. Then, because I'm the cautious type, I oiled a small part here and there. Finally, I replaced all the cartridges, and as an extra precaution, dropped a few spares in my jacket pocket. Pier 7 was occupied by a freighter wearing rusty sides, dribbling a small plume of smoke from a stack and dirty water from her sides. As I neared the entrance, I could spot an occasional figure moving about the deck. I wondered if the girl could have come from there.
Granger!
Hello!
Over here!
You've got them?
Yeah. Here, take them.
Thanks, baby. Mind if I unwrap this package and make sure you're not kidding?
Go ahead, but hurry.
Okay. Guess you are on the level. Mind explaining why you turned these over to me?
You know why. Goodbye, Granger.
Hey, wait a minute. Get back, quick, here. Hurry.
Granger, they shot at me.
Yeah, and they shot at me, too. They're over in that doorway, two of them.
I've got to get out of here.
Oh, no, you don't. We're leaving together. There's a police car heading this way. That should worry him enough to give us our chance. As the police siren came nearer, the guys hidden in the doorways stopped shooting. They took a chance and beat it round a corner. We're lucky enough to pick up a passing cab, and 10 minutes later, we were in a secluded booth in the back of a midtown restaurant. Now, baby, what's all this about? Your pals tried to shoot you down. Why?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't. I did everything the men told me.
Who are these men? How come they told you to come to me?
They said that you were holding my uncle, that you wanted the counterfeit $20 plates. That if I gave him to you, you'd let him go.
And who is this uncle?
Uncle Nat.
Uncle Nat? You mean Nat the printer?
Of course.
Baby, don't you read the newspapers.
Why?
Nat died this morning in his basement apartment on 13th Street. He'd been tortured, then knifed.
But he said...
When you say they, is one of them an older man who wears a gray business suit and a Homburg hat? His name isn't Glazer...
How did you know?
And the other one. Is he called Mitch?
Yes.
The police want Mitch, little lady. He's the one who killed your Uncle Nat. Nat told me before he died.
You're not lying.
I can prove that.
Then why did they give back the plates? And why did they shoot at me?
Why the two men, that must have been the well-dressed older man and Mitch, had tried to kill both of us, was just as much of a mystery to me. Rita Swanson and I got another taxicab and went down to Church Street to see Ed. First, he printed a counterfeit $20 bill from the plates I gave him.
Well, here's your sample.
Oh, no, Ed. Not anything that bad.
I agree.
Matt, the printer, was a real craftsman. These plates print like the engraver used a crowbar.
That thing's so obviously phony, it wouldn't get past a 5-year-old child.
That is that.
Now, Miss Swanson, I'll get a stenographer in here to take down your statement. You willing?
Of course.
When Rita Swanson started talking, I heard a lot of things that hadn't been explained before. Also, the setup she revealed was a honey for passing counterfeit money in New York. And the reason for killing the girl and me became obvious.
What are you talking about, Granger?
The girl hands me the plates, right? Then we're both knocked off. The plates are in our possession when our bodies are found. That puts our two friends in the clear to start using the plates Nat made. The good ones.
What a place to pass counterfeit money. A theater ticket agency.
How'd they get away with that? Requires a license, you know.
Yeah, one of my men's checking the license bureau now.
Five will get you 10. They're not licensed. They never stand investigation.
Well, that's not what bothers me. But how to get them start passing the bills does.
I think I've got it, Ed. Miss Swanson and I are at Bellevue Hospital. Condition critical. Guards at door.
Go on.
Issue a bulletin to the papers. All of a sudden, we both take a turn for the worse. We die. That disposes of the only two witnesses.
Yeah, get on to it right away.
And tell the newspaper boys I don't mind dying. On paper. Ed set the stage as carefully as for a Broadway play. A spotter watched the two men operate their theater ticket agency. One that catered mainly to out-of-towners. 2 days later, the trap was baited. It was late afternoon, after the banks had closed. A government man posing as a tourist approached the ticket agency. A big window opened on the main hallway of the building the agency occupied.
How do you do, sir? What can we do for you?
Well, I was wondering, what about some seats for My Fair Lady?
My Fair Lady? Tickets next summer.
Oh. Oh, but my wife and I will be here only this week. I'd pay you almost anything.
Almost anything?
Yes. Scalpers prices.
Oh, I'm sorry. We are a licensed and recognized ticket agency. However, under the circumstances, I could ask around. Perhaps I could obtain a pair at slightly over normal price?
Slightly.
About $35? That is, $35 each.
Oh, my. Oh, yeah. Well, my wife said not to come back to the hotel without them, so I guess I'd better get them.
Very well, sir. That will be $70 in advance.
Oh, in advance.
Yes, yeah, thank you. The ticket shall be waiting here for you in 1 hour.
Oh, thank you. Here you are. Oh, can you change 100?
100? Why, certainly, sir. Here you are, sir. Your receipt.
Thank you.
Presented when you pick up the tickets. And your change. 70, 90, 100.
Oh, thank you.
Let's go, Granger.
Hmm?
Just a minute, fella.
Well, why? What's wrong?
The United States government. Here, let me see that $20 bill. Stand still, Merling.
What are you doing?
Shut up, fatty.
Granger!
Yeah. Alive and aching to be kicking. You.
You saw this bill pass, Granger.
I did.
Merling, you're under arrest. Passing counterfeit money.
Say, Merling, I was just going to... Granger!
Well, well, our reporter friend, alias the mysterious Mitch, I presume. Come here, pal, I want you.
I don't think so.
I do.
Nice work, Granger. You coming along with me and these two birds?
But obviously... Well, friends, that's the story. I'll be back to wrap up the case in just a minute. Merling, the big one, and Mitch, the wounded one, were taken places by Ed, the government man, and locked up. I went along. When things had been settled, got out of there. I wanted to break the news to Rita Swanson.
Granger, did it work?
Went off like a $3 alarm clock, baby. Merling and Mitch are in jail.
For Uncle Matt's murder?
Presently, for counterfeiting. But the government and the local police will no doubt get together on the matter.
I hope they both go to the chair.
They're within walking distance now. They look great up in the witness chair.
Thanks.
Yes, sir. You'll do all right.
I'd feel better if I were occupying another chair right now.
Another chair? Where?
In a restaurant. I'm hungry.
Oh, I think I get it.
And I'd just love to have you with me.
I know. Paying the check. Steve Granger again. You've just heard one of the most interesting cases in my files. And I'll have another one for you. So be around next time.
Danger with Granger on Tuned to Yesterday from the Mutual Broadcasting System. Only 28 episodes survive of that series, which was heard in July of 56 through February of 1957.
Ellery Queen's Minute Mysteries. This is Ellery Queen with the case I call The Psychological Error. Police were befuddled by the story of a man named Ames who said he had shot his neighbor in a fit of complete terror and fear. Ames said his neighbor had approached him while he, Ames, was out shooting. The neighbor had repeatedly threatened me, Ames said, and in panic, my reflexes told me to fire. I told him I didn't know where he was getting his reflexes tested, but they weren't working. In a moment, the rest of the story.
It's an hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier.
In the case of the psychological error, a shooting by reflex as a result of fear is not reasonable. Reflexes are the result of conditioning. The murderer tried to fool me with psychology, but I psyched him instead. Listen again to Ellery Queen's Minute Mysteries.
And now one of the most popular crime anthology series from radio's yesteryear hits The Whistler with Bill Foreman as storyteller for the episode She Wanted Too Much from May 16, 1954 on the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Whistler. Presented by the United States Air Forces in Europe.
I am the Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales, hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
The Whistler. And now, the Whistler's strange story. She wanted too much.
Ruth Walker looked beautiful standing there by the window. Part of it was because Ruth knew how to look beautiful, and more important, when to look beautiful. Yes, you realized the importance of your appearance when you were very young, didn't you, Ruth? And now, at this rather late hour, your employer, Charles Burton, seems especially susceptible to your wistful, seemingly innocent beauty. And as Charles smiles at you, and you smile in return, the relationship of employer and secretary seems to change. Here at your apartment, Charles seems to forget his jewelry store, his troubles at home, everything but his immediate surroundings.
I think you'll find this just right, Charles.
Oh, thanks, Ruth. I'm sure I will. Everything you do is just right.
You know, if you keep saying that, you might convince me, and then I'd be unbearable, darling. Here, drink your thing.
Thanks.
Good?
Oh, perfect. All right, Ruth. What day is it?
Exactly 5 months ago, I walked into your jewelry store, asked for a job. There wasn't any until...
Until I walked in and saw.
And then there was.
5 months ago today.
Yes, Charles, it's all been wonderful. Only one thing missing. For me, anyway.
Yes?
Not having you always, darling. 365 days a year.
Ruth? I thought we'd agreed not to discuss that.
I'm sorry. It's just that I...
Let's not spoil what we have, Ruth. There's no chains, nothing holding either of us.
Except that I've fallen in love with you.
You'll get over it when you meet some nice young man.
I won't. I don't even want to, ever.
I'm still married, Ruth. My wife isn't well. I couldn't leave her after 20 years. The shock would be too much. I've asked nothing of you except the pleasure of your company from time to time. If you'd rather not see me anymore...
Oh, please, Charles, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said anything.
No, Ruth, you really shouldn't have. I wish you hadn't.
Well, Ruth, even after 5 months, you're moving too fast, aren't you? Charles Verdon, your employer and friend, is still cautious, on guard. You're not even sure that you haven't spoiled your original plan. You're still wondering about it after Charles leaves, when...
Fred, you shouldn't have come here like this.
Easy, baby. I saw him leave. Close the door when I talk to you.
It's late.
Ah, relax. Sit down.
All right, Fred. What's bothering you?
When do we go to work on your boyfriend? You got enough on him right now for me to approach him?
We have nothing on him. So far, he's simply been friendly and kind.
He's given you quite a few expensive doodads, hasn't he?
Well...
He's been up here plenty of times. That's enough for me. Besides, you can always exaggerate a little. You have before. Now, when do I go to see him and threaten to tell his wife?
I'll tell you when.
You told me that 3 months ago. Hey, you wouldn't have something else in your mind, would you?
Like what?
Like deciding to sell Mr. Big and getting a divorce and marrying him? Cutting me out of the deal?
That's ridiculous. He's old enough to be my father.
That don't bother a lot of women.
I'm as anxious for some of the Verdon money as you are.
All right, then figure out something.
Well, I think I have. But it'll take a little nerve. I don't like the blackmail idea, Fred. It's too risky. Charles might not go for it either.
You thought of a better idea?
I think so. You can hold him up.
Hold him up? Your boss?
Yes, it'll be easy, Fred.
Oh, you're out of your mind. Besides, I'm not interested in small change.
You call 20 or 30,000 small change?
You telling me he carries...
Listen, Fred, tomorrow night Charles is taking some diamond rings and bracelets to the Blue Hills Hotel to show a woman customer from out of town, an older woman. She didn't want to come to the store, so Charles agreed to bring them over. Now, he's due there at 9 o'clock.
He's a little reckless for a man of his age, isn't he?
Not particularly. It's not unusual. He lives within 5 minutes' drive of the Blue Hills. He can carry them in a case in his inside pocket, and no one but me knows anything about it.
I still don't like it.
Well, you will when I tell you how I've worked it out. Let me get you a cup of coffee. It's all ready. Here, Fred. What's the idea of going through my desk drawer?
I'm not going through it. I'm looking for some cigarettes.
Oh. Well, there's some in that box on the television set.
Okay.
Here's your coffee. Look, Fred, this is so simple a child could do it. Charles will get to the Blue Hills about 9. You'll park on the lot. Now, there's only one attendant. You can get in the car while he's in the hotel. Hide in the back seat. I'll give you a key to the car.
Oh, you got a key to his car, hmm?
Yes, he forgets and locks his keys in the car every now and then when he comes over, so he had an extra one made for me. The license number is Q248Y13. It's a big blue sedan.
Yeah, I know the car. I've seen it parked outside this place often enough.
Well, it was your idea that I'd get the job with Charles and play up to
okay,
him.
Okay, okay. You know, you might have an idea at that.
It's as foolproof as anything can be.
Worth a try, I guess. Tomorrow night, huh?
Yes. Now listen, Fred. All you have to remember...
Fred reacted exactly as you hoped. And you're certain that after the holdup, Fred will be out of your life for many years at least, aren't you, Ruth? Next evening, you return home immediately after the store closes. Wait impatiently until 20 minutes before 9. Then leave your apartment. Speak pleasantly to the desk clerk in the lobby as you carefully explain you'll be back in a few minutes. You're certain Fred will do exactly as you've told him. And you know what you're going to do, too, don't you, Ruth? Yes. You know exactly what you're going to do. And you smile grimly as you enter the corner drugstore, walk quickly to the phone booth, and dial the police.
4th Precinct Station, Sergeant Gray.
There's going to be a holdup about 9:30.
But just a minute. Who's talking?
It doesn't matter, and you needn't try to trace this call. I'm talking from a public phone. If you're interested, someone is planning to hold up Charles Verdon in his car at 9:30 on the parking lot of the Blue Hills Hotel. It's a blue sedan, license number Q248Y13. The hold-up man will be hiding in the car.
Hello?
it's done, isn't it? And you're certain that within the hour you will be well rid of Fred Markle, your former sweetheart and partner in more than one shady activity. When you return to the apartment building, you chat idly for 20 minutes or so with the desk clerk. Then take the elevator to your apartment. As you're about to turn on your radio and perhaps hear a news flash of the holdup...
Fred!
What's the matter, pal? You're looking at me like you're surprised I'm still around.
Well, no. Come in. I'm just surprised you got back so soon. I don't see how you had time.
I didn't wait for him to park at the Blue Hills.
What?
I drove by his house about 8:30. His car was parked outside.
What?
It was dark, so I decided to take him before he went to the Blue Hills.
You did?
I parked and got in the back of his car okay. In about 5 minutes, Burton came out. Got behind the wheel.
Somebody saw you?
No. But your boss got a little rough. He's a pretty big guy. Wasn't easy. I had to shoot him.
Do you mean you killed him?
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
You fool. I told you not to get rough.
Burton's the boy that got rough. What else could I do? It was him or me.
Who did you get the jewels?
No, I didn't get the jewels. I barely got away as it was. What I want to know is who tipped him off.
You think he was tipped off?
Well, he acted like it. He had a gun.
Sit down, Fred. I'll get you a drink. Then you can tell me all about it.
Yeah, okay. I can use one.
Here, Fred. I told you last night the cigarettes are in that box on the TV set. That desk drawer seems to fascinate you.
I wasn't looking for cigarettes this time, baby. I was looking for this gun of yours. Noticed it last night when I opened this drawer. Lucky for you, it's still here.
What do you mean?
I mean that gun your friend Burton was carrying tonight looked a lot like this one. Good thing it's still here. I'd have figured you tipped him off and loaned him this gun to rub me out. See, where'd you get this gun? You never told me you had a rod.
Charles gave it to me. Sometimes when he went out on deals like tonight, he asked me to go with him.
Bodyguard, huh? Well, it's still here, so let me have my drink. We'll forget it.
Yeah.
What's the matter? Your hands are shaking.
Oh, why wouldn't they be shaking after what you've just done to Charles? Of all the stupid, unnecessary...
You really thought a lot of him, didn't you?
Skip it. Point is, our plans are out the window, and if you're caught, you'll be faced with a charge of murder.
We'll be faced with a charge of murder. If you think I'll take this rap alone, you're crazy. Wait a minute. That's a police siren. Coming this way.
You better go, Fred, out the back way and get out of town for a while.
What with? You know I'm down to nothing.
Well, I can let you have 200 here. Cashed a check today. This will take you quite a distance and keep you for a couple of weeks. But for heaven's sake, get going.
All right, but I'll be back, baby, in a couple of months.
Yes?
I'm Lieutenant Wilson, Homicide, and sorry to disturb you at this hour.
What's wrong, Lieutenant?
I'm afraid I have some bad news for you about your employer, Mr. Burton.
Mr. Burton?
Yes. I'll make it brief. There was an attempted holdup. He was killed.
Mr. Burton?
Here. You better sit down, Miss Walker.
Thank you.
Now, tell me, you were here all evening?
Well, yes, except for about 5 minutes when I walked down to the drugstore.
Mm-hmm.
The desk clerk saw me leave and return. You may... ask him if you like.
Oh, no, that won't be necessary. Just a routine question. Well, I guess that's all for now. Good night, Miss Walker.
Good night, Lieutenant.
You feel better after the officer leaves, but you're still nervous and upset, aren't you, Ruth? You're sure Fred has left town, and you're glad he's gone. But without Charles Burton, the man you'd planned to marry or compromise, your future seems darkly uncertain. You're not even sure you'll be retained at the Verdon Jewelry Company, are you? Next day, the store is closed. But the following day, you return to work. And a week later, when you enter the private office formerly occupied by your late employer.
Good morning.
Oh, excuse me, I didn't know.
Well, that's quite all right. Come on in. You're Miss Walker, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
I'm Bob Paxford, Mrs. Verdon's nephew. Won't you sit down?
Thank you.
My aunt has asked me to sort of run the business for her, at least for a while, until she can find someone capable of it.
I see.
I wasn't very anxious to take it, but she and Uncle Charles have always been so nice to me, I thought I ought to give it a try, at least.
Well, I'm sure you'll do very well.
Oh, I'm afraid not, unless I get a lot of help from a lot of you people here in the store. And that brings me to the big question.
The...
big question?
Yes. My aunt says Uncle Charles thought a great deal of you, your ability. She says he often remarked he didn't know how he got along before you became his personal secretary.
Well, that's nice to hear, but I'm afraid it's more than I deserve.
Oh, not according to Aunt Alice. Anyway, would you mind staying on as my secretary till I sort of get on to things?
Why, no. I'll be glad to.
Oh, good. Well, that's a big load off my mind. I'll do my best to show my appreciation.
Oh, don't worry about it, Mr. Paxford. I'm glad you offered me the position. I think I'm going to enjoy working with you.
Yes, you're certain of it, aren't you, Ruth? Bob Paxford is handsome, young, wealthy, and single. You're careful in everything you do and say. And within a few days, you're certain Bob is almost as impressed as was his late uncle. It isn't long until he invites you to lunch, and this is followed by an invitation to the theater. Many other dates follow. And at the end of 2 months, you're certain he's in love with you. That it's only a question of time until he asks you to marry him. Then late one evening, Bob parks at a quiet spot on a high cliff overlooking the sea and turns on the car radio.
I'm crazy about this little spot.
It's the first place we ever stopped and parked, isn't it, Bob?
Yeah. That's why I'm crazy about it, I guess.
I'd like to believe that.
You can. That's why I parked in this particular spot, this particular evening.
What's so particular about this evening, Mr. Paxford?
Well, I had something sort of particular to say. Something I've always been wanting to say since the first time I saw you, almost.
Well?
I love you, Ruth. I want you to marry me.
Just like that?
Just like that.
No questions about who I am? My past, old boyfriends, anything?
Nothing. I don't care who you were or what you did before you knew me. I don't even want to know. Well, how about it?
Bob.
Yes?
Don't you think a gal could answer that question better if the guy who asked her had his arms around her?
Oh, Ruth, darling.
I'd be back in a couple of months.
Well, even so, you didn't have to come here.
Oh, why not? Mr. Paxford's gone for the evening. Watched him drive away 10 minutes ago. Hey, what a ring you're wearing. Paxford gave it to you, huh?
Yes, he did.
So you're going to marry him?
No, why shouldn't I? Everything between you and me died a long time ago.
Oh, relax. I don't blame you. I'm the last guy in the world to try to keep an old pal from marrying Doe.
You won't believe it, but I happen to love him.
Sure, I believe it. But I bet you wouldn't if he was broke. Like I am, for instance.
What are you getting at, Fred?
Oh, just a little loan for old time's sake.
Nice, friendly blackmail. How much?
I'll go easy on you. 2,000.
I couldn't possibly raise that much, and you know it.
Okay, I'm a reasonable guy. 1,000.
Until when?
Until never. Let me have a grand, you'll never hear from me again. You and Casanova can live happily ever after, and that's a promise.
All right, Fred, I'll take your word this time.
Now you're being smart, baby. I'm out of your hair from now on. Honest.
It'll take all my savings. I'll have to pawn my necklace. But meet me at the Mid-City National Bank at 10:30 in the morning. I'll have it for you.
Next morning, you give Fred the $1,000. And as the weeks pass, you hear nothing further from him. Then one day, when you and Bob attend the opening day of the races...
And approaching the finish line, it's a baby star by a head.
Come on, baby star! Come on, baby star!
At the wire, it's baby star. Dolphin on the stand line.
Oh, we're sure picking him today, honey.
Dorothy, we ran this time.
Well, the payoff's being posted right now. Let's see. 2,280, $228.
Oh, that's our fourth winner.
Yeah. And I got two of those winners from a friend of mine. If you'll excuse me for a minute, honey, I think I'll go to the bar and see what he likes in the next race.
Oh, run along. He's been a perfect picker so far.
I won't be gone 5 minutes.
A seat taken, lady?
Now, these are reserved. Fred, you...
I know what I said, and I meant it. But I lost most of that grand in Nevada. Did you Just let me have one more thousand, huh?
You're crazy. Where do you think I'm going to get it?
You've been doing okay today. Been watching Paxford collect for you.
You get away from here, Fred, before you ruin everything. Call me at my apartment around 11:30 tonight.
No use in calling you, Ruth. I'll be there.
Then come in through the rear entrance and walk up. I can't afford for you to be seen.
Okay. Be seeing you.
I got the answer, Ruthie. Homicide.
What?
Our bet in the next race. Homicide.
Homicide, hmm? Well, you know, I think that's a real hunch, darling. Homicide.
Come on in, Fred. Did you come in the back way?
I said I would, didn't I? You have the thousand?
Yes, I have it.
Good. Figured you'd decide to play it safe.
I've got to play it safe, Fred.
Okay, let's have it. And this is the last time, Ruth, on the level.
All right, I'll get it for you. And you're right, Fred. This is the last time.
What's the idea of the gun?
You'll see. Now, you stay where you are.
Who are you phoning?
Switchboard downstairs. The clerk's testimony will be very helpful.
Yes, clerk speaking. What is it, Miss Walker?
Get me the police, quickly. Hey, there's a burglar in my apartment. Help
give
me.
Give me that phone.
Stay away from me. Stay away from me.
Miss Walker. Miss Walker, are you all right?
I'm all right. But I shot the man that forced his way into my apartment. I think I killed him.
Do you feel well enough to talk now, Miss Walker?
Yes, Lieutenant, I'm all right.
Have you ever seen this man before?
Not before today. I saw him at the racetrack this afternoon.
Oh? Well, how did you happen to notice him?
He kept looking at me.
Did you have a good day at the track, Miss Walker?
Well, why, yes, very good. Mr. Paxford was with me.
Uh-huh. This man saw you winning, followed you home.
Oh, but I had dinner with Mr. Paxford after the races. It was after 11 when this man knocked on my door and forced his way in.
He asked for money, didn't he?
We demanded $1,000. I didn't think of it before, but that's just about what I won, Lieutenant.
Yeah, he spotted you at the track, all right. Well, that wraps it up. Try to get a good night's rest. Forget the whole thing.
And I've just killed a man?
But you killed him in self-defense. He might have killed you, you know.
Yes, but still...
Forget it, Miss Walker. No one could possibly blame you for this. You haven't a thing to worry about, believe me.
It was even easier than you thought it would be. The police didn't seem to doubt your story for a moment, did they? No, your timing was perfect. Phoning the desk clerk at just the right moment. Making certain he'd hear your frantic call for help. Your plea for the police. Then the shots. Now, Fred Markle is out of your life forever. And you're certain there's nothing left to stop your marriage to wealthy Bob Paxford. You're certain, too, that the last link between you and the murder of Charles Verdon has been eliminated. Late the following morning, you're having coffee in your apartment when...
Oh, good morning, Lieutenant. Sit down, won't you?
I brought your gun back, Miss Walker.
My gun? I didn't know you had it.
I took it when I left you last night. You were probably too upset to notice. Just normal routine.
I see.
You always keep this revolver in your own personal possession, do you, Miss Walker?
Well, except when I was with Mr. Verdon when he was carrying unusually valuable jewelry. I keep it there in the desk drawer. Mm-hmm. Incidentally, I have a permit.
I know. We looked that up. Ever loan it to anyone?
Never. What's this all about, Lieutenant?
I'm afraid I'm going to have to charge you with murder, Miss Walker.
Murder? Well, last night you said it was self-defense.
I'm not talking about last night. I'm talking about the murder of Charles Verdon and that attempted holdup a few months ago.
I wasn't anywhere near there. How could you possibly...
The gun you used in Fred Markle last night, your gun, Miss Walker, is the same gun that killed Charles Verdon.
My gun?
Ballistics prove it beyond a doubt.
It couldn't have been. Unless... Fred.
Fred who?
Fred Markle.
That's the man you shot last night, isn't
it? Yes, but he's the one who killed Mr. Verdon, Lieutenant. I remember now. He was at my apartment the night before Mr. Verdon was killed. He opened the desk drawer where I kept the gun looking for cigarettes. That's when he took it. It had to be. And then the night he killed Charles, he opened the drawer again and put it back. I know he did.
Now, wait a minute. Are you saying that Fred Markle came to see you at your apartment the night before Mr. Verdon was killed? And again the following night after Mr. Verdon was killed?
Yes, but I can explain that.
Last night, you said you'd never seen him before.
Well, I know, but I lied. I didn't want to get mixed up in anything, but Fred had been blackmailing me.
So you killed Markle before he could get to young Bob Paxford to tell him about you and wreck your marriage, huh?
Oh, no, no. Fred threatened to kill me last night.
It's no go, Miss Walker. You're under arrest.
But I didn't do it, I tell you.
You'll have to tell that to the jury, Miss Walker. I'm afraid they'll never believe that your gun killed two different men you knew and that you were innocent in both killings.
Join us again next week when once again the United States Air Forces in Europe presents The Whistler. This is Air Force Sergeant Don Cormier speaking.
The Whistler on Tuned To Yesterday from May 16, 1954 on CBS. The show would wrap up in September of 1955. And that closes this hour of crime on Tuned To Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. Thanks for listening.